I stumbled a little as I told her what happened to her husband. Then Eurus, the god of the east wind, entered through the portal and took over Prince Iko's body. He... The queen held up a palm. She was shaking her head, her expression more haunted than ever. You expect me to believe this, Ruby? Surely this can't be true. You saw it yourself. I know you did. I saw a bright light. She lifted her chin proudly. It could have been a reflection of fire. You want to deny it because you can't make sense of it, but you saw it happen. Prince Kai can verify it. I didn't offer Arcas's testimony, because I knew she wouldn't accept his word on anything. It's true, Your Majesty, Kai said, his voice still rough. When I was searching the castle for Ruby after the initiation, Prince Iko found me. He was frantic, saying that he'd been expelled from a secret throne room by a Frostblood woman, and that Ruby and the Frost King were in danger. I followed him back, and there we saw the god of the East Wind. Kai swallowed hard. He took over Prince Iko's body. He blasted me with fire, and I was knocked out. I woke as Eurus tried to take Ruby through the portal. We had no choice but to fight him. Then he used the Frostblood woman as a shield so we couldn't attack. He left through the portal as you came in. The queen's eyes fluttered closed, and she bent forward at the waist. Master Dalla held her up, his expression murderous. I'm sorry, Your Majesty, Kai said softly, so much pain in his voice that my heart contracted. I failed you. I should have protected him. I shook my head. There was nothing he could have done. But Kai wasn't looking at me. He was staring at the floor, locked in self-recrimination. Does he live? The queen asked hoarsely. Is he still alive somewhere? We don't know for sure. I couldn't bear to tell her that Eurus had said that Prince Iko was gone. Maybe there was some small chance of rescuing him. I wouldn't take away her hope. I feel weak, she said plaintively. I feel sick. I need Iko. I need something. Something feels wrong. Her voice rose. The voice that calms me is gone. She moaned, the sound echoing off the ceiling, multiplying her pain. The words were shredded, desperate, begging. I moved closer to her slowly, trying to block out Master Dalla's hostility. I was careful not to touch the queen in case contact with my skin would alert her to the presence of the Minax inside me. It was the curse in the throne, I said softly. The voice in your head was the Minax, urging you to war and acts of hatred. It eased my pain, she cried, almost keening the words. It made me strong. We were all silent for a moment. I looked down, not wanting to see the naked vulnerability on the queen's face. It seemed wrong there, somehow. And where is the curse? The Minax, no? She begged. I hesitated, looking at Arcas briefly for his opinion on what to tell her. He shook his head almost imperceptibly. One of the Minax was destroyed, I said. Eurus plans to use the other to open the Gate of Light and unleash the rest of the Minax trapped behind it. Both statements were technically true, if misleading. I'm sorry, Your Majesty, I said again, not knowing what else to say. I didn't even know if she was capable of understanding what I said. However, Master Dalla looked shocked. I stared hard at him. He couldn't deny this was a threat to his queen and kingdom, something the masters should help us deal with instead of blocking our attempts. That was, if he chose to believe me. You must go after Prince Iko, Queen Nalani said, quietly raising her eyes to Kai's. Then she said more firmly, You will go after him, and you must stop this monster. I will, Kai said simply. Immediately. I'll go too, I said.
And I, said Arcas.
Master Dalla looked at him with loathing.
You will go nowhere.
I glanced around the room. There were four masters in addition to the Queen and Master Dalla. Kai was a master now too, I realized with a shock. He would be obliged to fight against Arcas and me. And if we did fight, the Minax that lay dormant in my mind could wake and I could lose control. It was too great a risk. You must allow it, Your Majesty, I said urgently. If we don't stop Eurus, he'll open the Gate of Light, and countless shadow creatures with the ability to control people will spill over the earth, possessing and killing people, and we're the only ones who can stop it.
Why? She asked. Why only you?
I glanced at Arcas, and he nodded. I'm what Eurus calls a Nightblood. I have some ability to control the Minax. But I need Arcas and Kai with me. If we have any hope of retrieving Prince Iko, we have to use every weapon at our disposal. The Queen glanced at Arcas, as if struggling to understand how he, the enemy, had become vital to the rescue of her husband. At least, I hoped those were her thoughts. I turned to Master Dalla. You must know how dangerous Eurus is, and that we need to act quickly.
The Masters have never lost our connection to ancient knowledge, he replied. It's now a question of which steps to take to avert this disaster.
I sighed my relief. I'd been afraid that they'd continue to fight against us.
Have you considered that Eurus hopes you'll follow him? Master Dalla said. He could be luring you into a trap.
All the more reason for both the king and me to be there. Kai jumped in. Our combined power will give us the best chance of success, and we'll both guard Ruby with our lives.
I looked at him with surprise. He was arguing on Arcas's behalf. The queen looked down for a moment, touching her wedding band lightly before squaring her shoulders. When she spoke, her voice was still weak, but the old note of determination had returned.
I have been entrusted by birth with the responsibility of caring for an entire kingdom. When King Rasmus took the Frost Throne, I was helpless to stop the massacre of my people. We were caught unprepared, not enough ships, not enough weapons or soldiers, unable to fight.
She stared at Arcas, and my heart lodged in my throat. She was going to throw him in prison, question him, kill him. She would do all the things she'd threatened and more, taking her rage and pain out on him. My whole body was filled with bated breath.
I will not be responsible for another massacre, she said, a fierce light shining in her dark eyes. I will not stand by as tragedy unfolds. She turned to me. If you, my niece, tell me that you must go, then I must place my trust in you, and you will go.
I let out the breath.
Thank you. You will all go then, and you will take Master Dalla and a contingent of masters with you.
Arcas cleared his throat.
Respectfully, Your Majesty, even if my crew accepts the presence of Fireblood Masters, the enmity between our people goes back too far. I'm afraid we have a long way to go before Sudesians adjust to a cordial relationship with Tempesians and vice versa. Though, to be clear, I very much hope our kingdoms will be allies again.
Allies or not, my masters are going, she declared. Rest assured they'll behave with admirable self-control. See that your crew does the same.
We could take two ships, Kai suggested. The Fireblood Masters could travel on mine. As my ship is faster, I'll take Ruby with me. The king and the Frostblood crew can follow in theirs.
Arcas made a quiet sound, a low growl deep in his throat.
Ruby will be with me. That is not negotiable.
The Queen's eyes narrowed.
You will do what is best for the mission.
Then we'll take one ship, Kai conceded, and we'll combine our crews.
She gestured to the door.
Go then. Take all the supplies you need.
My throat was tight. Thank you for your faith in us. She turned her gaze on Arcas.
I will hold you responsible if my husband and my niece are not safely returned.
I would feel the same in your position, Your Majesty, he replied. I would tear the world apart if someone took Ruby from me.
She gave him a long, considering look. Their eyes held, some message passing between them. She leaned into Master Dalla and whispered into his ear. He nodded and led her carefully, step by step, to the doorway. She looked as if she'd aged by decades. The loss of the Minax had ripped something important from her. I wondered if she'd ever be herself again, or if some essential part was lost forever. A chill ran through me. Is that how I would look one day? What would be left of me once I finally found a way to destroy the Minax I held in my heart? Chapter 29
You might as well wrap me in sailcloth and dump me over the side, Jarrow moaned, gesturing past the railing to endless rolling waves. Those frostbloods will be the death of me.
All they want is to be given births, same as the Sudesian sailors, I said in a placating tone. A northeastern breeze grabbed my words and threw them back at me. Even the wind was arguing tonight. Surely you can find room in the forecastle.
I'll have to put them right next to each other, he cried,
oblivious to the attentive ears of the crew, keeping busy at their newly assigned tasks on the main deck.
They'll kill each other.
I reached up and patted one of his hands, both of which were fisted in his already thin hair, one frustrated tug away from ripping out strands he could ill afford to lose. You'll find a way, Jarrow, you always do. His shoulders slumped as he dropped his arms.
The prince can pay me double my usual wage for this trip.
I'm sure you can negotiate some extra pay with the captain. I had no idea if that was true. I'd been telling everyone what they wanted to hear, walking on eggshells strewn over a tightrope for the past day. I was weak and hungry, and could barely see straight, my eyes nearly crossing from exhaustion. After leaving the cavern, Kai and I had accompanied Arcas to his ship. Kai had inspected the vessel thoroughly, and quickly declared it too old, too slow, and in need of several repairs. After a certain amount of bickering, bribing, begging, and grudging compromise, we'd all agreed to take Kai's ship with a combined crew of Sudesian and Tempesian sailors, along with a half-dozen Fireblood Masters, as decreed by the Queen. The Sudesian sailors had only agreed to crew a ship alongside Frostbloods after we'd informed them that Kai would captain the ship. Ava and Katrin already showed signs of becoming fast friends, leaping and scuttling along the lines like demented spiders. Jarrow bellowed cautionary remarks at the ship's girls, which earned him nothing but impish grins. The storm that had gusted in the day before had blown itself out just as quickly. The errant princess had been hastily crewed and outfitted, and we'd left port at dawn. The jewel-green island had disappeared in a grey haze. Kai had set a course for Tempesia. We hoped Brother Thistle would be able to help us interpret the more cryptic passages of the creation of the thrones, which I'd retrieved from Prince Iko's observatory. Perhaps some hint, something hidden in the illuminations or in the symbols on some of the pages, would lead us to the Gate of Light. Spyglasses were currently fixed on the horizon, though even the last streaks of sunset were fading. I was eager to curl up in whatever hammock or pile of sailcloth would serve as my bed. More permanent accommodations could be sorted out tomorrow.
So, this is what perdition is like, a low rumble said, followed by the sensation of cold.
I shivered and turned to lean my back against the railing. Arcas and I hadn't had a moment alone together in the rush to organize the voyage. Not that we were alone now with the crew all over. Still, it was a relief to have a moment to soak up his presence.
Ocean cruise not to your liking?
I asked, shaking my head to surrender my tangled hair to the wind's questing fingers. My braid had come undone hours ago, and I hadn't bothered to repair it.
Arcas laid an arm along the railing and moved closer than what could be called, even by the most indifferent of observers, a polite distance.
In his court, he'd been careful not to engage in physical displays unless we were alone. I couldn't help but wonder if he was staking his claim on me. My eyes were drawn to Kai, who stood on the quarterdeck, his eyes narrowed thoughtfully, hair charmingly mussed by the wind. How did he feel being back at sea only a day after taking his vows as master? Relieved? Disappointed? Indifferent? It was hard to tell. Despite his open book exterior, he hid much behind that charismatic mask.
"Not when half the crew wants to kill the other half," Arcus said, answering my earlier question.
I turned back to him and smiled, suddenly filled with gratitude that he was safe. The Queen had gone from planning to imprison, interrogate and possibly kill him, to letting him go. That change of heart was proof, to my mind, that she had been under the influence of the Minax, and was no longer. Now the Minax was my burden to bear, but so far, I only felt its presence as a distant throb, like a toothache that comes and goes. I was also glad, I realized with a surprise jolt, not to have taken my vows as a master. I wasn't sure until that moment how I really felt about it. I'd wanted the approval of the masters, the inclusion into their ranks, but I didn't want the restrictions of pledging my life to the Queen. It was good to know I still belonged to myself. No matter what happened, I had this journey to spend with Arcus, and I would savor it. I would store up each memory like a treasured gem strung on a chain. I hoped the warmth of those remembrances would help me master the Minax when it woke, and when the time came to use my newfound Nightblood powers. "The Frostbloods don't want to kill the Firebloods," I corrected, wrapping my hand around his arm. He covered my hand with his in a cool caress. "They just want to dump them overboard to see if they can swim. It's more sporting that way. At least, that's what I heard a few of your crew members saying." Arcus closed his eyes briefly.
"It'll be a miracle if everyone survives as far as land."
"Well, we've already witnessed a few miracles, or events that are equally impossible. What's one more?" He leaned in, his voice lowering to an intimate volume.
"We haven't been alone until now, so I haven't had a chance to ask. How are you doing?"
His free hand lifted, and his knuckle traced a path along my cheek.
"You've been remarkably calm in the wake of some shocking revelations."
I considered answering flippantly, but this was Arcus. He would persist until I told him the truth. "Shaken," I admitted. "Terrified." "Determined." I looked up at him. The lanterns had been lit, casting a glow over the deck and brushing half his face in gold. He nodded slowly, but looked worried. In what started as a comforting gesture, I put a hand to his shoulder, feeling the hard muscle underneath the soft, dark shirt. The V-shaped collar exposed the bit of chest below his collarbone. Unable to help myself, I slid a hand to that enticing triangle sprinkled with hair. A pulse of coolness met my fingers, but it was as pleasant as heat. Better, because it was from him. Then somehow I was in his arms, struggling to get closer to the cold, hard wall of his chest. His arms bound me so tightly, I feared being snapped in half. I laughed breathlessly.
"I missed you so much after you left," he muttered,
burying his nose against my neck.
"I was so worried." "I missed you too,"
I had. I hadn't realized how much until I'd seen him again.
"Next time you go, take me with you."
I laughed again, tempted to point out that that might not always be practical. But the thought of practicality was sobering. Nothing had changed between us. Or if anything, matters had grown more complicated. He was still king of Tempesia, but now, against all odds, I was heir to the Sudesian throne. I should push him away, tell him it would never work. The same reservations I'd had before should still be there, multiplied tenfold. Only none of that would matter if we didn't stop Eurus from releasing the Minax from the Obscurum. That was the difference. That was what had changed. When you don't know if there's a tomorrow, you realize quickly what matters most. I couldn't afford to waste another moment with him. As he loosened his hold, I squeezed him harder, telling him without words that his feelings for me were not one-sided. His lips rested against my hair, and I breathed his scent, which was both calming and exciting at the same time. Finally, he set me back slightly.
I'm making you cold. You're shivering.
That's not from cold. I lifted a brow and added boldly, it's the feel of you that makes me shiver. I smiled when he shivered in response. A lantern was extinguished, then another. I realized we should go our separate ways, say goodnight, but I wasn't ready. We haven't talked about Morella, I ventured. She was a friend to us both. His jaw squared and he looked away.
I can't even let myself think about what she tried to do. It merely makes me want to kill her myself.
I can't believe I didn't see it. When I visited her on your ship, I was so worried about her. I paused. You must be worried about her still. He'd known her all his life. My feelings about Morella were complicated. She had been an ally against King Rasmus, then a friend, then a betrayer. I wondered if she'd known what she was doing when she first hosted the Minax. It had used her to get to its twin and Eurus. She had become a victim in the end. Whatever she had done, she didn't deserve to die for it. I admitted to myself then that I wanted to find and rescue Morella too, if we could.
I can't help but regret what happened to her, Arcus said finally, echoing my thoughts as he sometimes did. But I'm far more worried about you. Are you... Can you feel its presence?
We had to be very careful to hide my secret on the ship. If word got out to the crew that a Minax was on board, it would be pandemonium. I knew the superstitions of sailors, and this would horrify even the most skeptical of souls. Not so much. I wondered how to describe it. It's... dormant, I suppose is the best word. I know it's there, but barely.
Good,
he said, wrapping an arm around my back and pulling me close.
I hope it stays that way.
Me too.
And how do you feel about what Eurus said?
That I'm a Nightblood? Even the word chilled me. Night was too vast, too inevitable. You could light a candle and hide, but you could never fight it. And I carried it in my veins. I rubbed my upper arms to warm them, and tried to hide my fear. I don't want to believe it. Part of me hopes it's not true, even though there are signs it is. The mark. The way I can host the creature without feeling sick. My ability to control the Minax to the degree that one destroyed the other.
You are remarkable, he whispered. I hope you know that. The things you've done. The things you've had to face.
I didn't feel remarkable. At the moment, I felt small and scared. Unequal to everything that I'd have to do, without a clear picture of what that even was. And tired. So tired. So I leaned more heavily on him, as I said. Even though I don't want to believe it, well, I have to face the truth. I am the... I lowered my voice. Child of darkness.
I don't believe that, he said with quiet vehemence. At least, I don't believe it's something evil. If that's what you are, then it's not bad, because everything about you is just as it should be.
I chuckled, surprised. I thought you said I rush into danger and take unnecessary risks. You told me I was selfish.
I was the selfish one. I just wanted you to stay. But if you hadn't come here... we'd never have discovered how to destroy the Minax.
We don't know how to destroy the other one, unfortunately.
Have you tried?
You mean just by willing it to die? No, I don't think that would work. I was terrified that if I reached out mentally, it would wake again. I still didn't know how or why it was dormant. It had occurred to me that if the Minax did share human traits, as Brother Thistle had once implied, that the creature could actually be grieving for its dead sibling. It had yearned for its twin for years, centuries. On the other hand, grief and death were fuel for the Minax. That could be making it stronger. As usual, when I dwelled on the Minax too much, my spirit sank. Arcus sensed the shift and pulled me tighter. The feel of his strength surrounding me was a balm on my soul. I closed my eyes and leaned my head against his chest. The sound of a throat clearing made me jerk back reflexively.
"Sorry," Kai said softly, as he came into the lantern light. "I didn't mean to scare you."
"I'm a little jumpy for some reason," I replied with a smile. For a second, I felt awkward, guilty about being wrapped in Arcus's embrace when Kai and I had kissed, and not a chaste peck either, just a few days ago. I still had all the warm feelings of friendship for Kai, and a few nebulous ones that might be more than friendship. But once I'd seen Arcus again, it had clarified things for me. I just hadn't had a chance to put them into words yet. I watched Kai's face for signs of bitterness or jealousy, but there were none, so I allowed myself to relax.
"Can't imagine why," he quipped.
His teasing was reassuring. "So, do you think you can get us to Tempesia in record time?" I asked.
"Of course."
His expression was so delightfully arrogant I almost wanted to laugh. Kai cleared his throat again.
"Do you have a moment?"
Arcus's arm slid away from me.
"Excuse me, I'd better go make sure my crew hasn't taken the best berths, or been forced to sleep in the brig."
He strode off in the direction of the hatch, and I watched him go, glad that he'd tactfully left me alone with Kai without showing any animosity toward him. Kai moved to lean on the railing beside me, a careful distance away, and tilted his head.
"How are you, little bird?"
I was glad he used my nickname, another sign that he wasn't upset with me. "Mostly I'm just tired. I feel worse for the Queen. She seemed so broken."
"She seemed stronger when I visited her before we left. You didn't want to come with me, if you recall."
"I feel so guilty, as if I betrayed her."
"For trying to save her? That is ridiculous. What happened after was not your fault."
He sighed.
"I keep wondering, though, whether Prince Iko is alive. Do you think his mind is still in there somewhere?"
"I truly don't know. Eurus probably wasn't like the Minax, who shared the space in your mind. A wind god would have far more power than his creation, and he seemed to have no scruples about snuffing out insignificant lives to suit his convenience. We need to be prepared for the worst."
"Except the worst keeps getting worse."
I chuckled. "We couldn't have prepared for Eurus." As I said the name, a puff of wind came from the east, filling the sails to bursting before dying off. "I remember not to say that name again," I whispered, rubbing the goosebumps on my arms.
"I'd appreciate that," Kai replied softly.
I took a deep breath and looked down. "I'm sorry I didn't tell you the real reason I came to Sudesia. I should have trusted you." I lifted my head slowly, scared of what I might see on his face. Anger? Hurt? Contempt? That would be worst of all. But what I saw in his eyes, golden in the lantern light and a little wide, was something warm and open. Sympathy. Understanding. Something harder to identify. As he caught me watching him, his eyelids fell to half-mast, and his mouth quirked in that typical teasing smile that warmed me by degrees until I couldn't help but return the look. My spirits, I realized, had lifted somewhere above the main mast. "Do you forgive me?"
"I suppose I must," he said,
flicking an invisible piece of lint from his pristine black doublet.
"Normally I would hold a grudge for such an offence. But one might say, Princess Ruby, without exaggeration, that you are an exception to all rules."
"Glad you recognize that,"
finally.
Exceptions must stick together.
He reached out and squeezed my shoulder, his expression conveying support and affection, but his hand lingering a little too long. It seemed our whole complicated history was contained in that gesture. His eyes went to the sailors on watch.
Well, it looks like everything is in hand. I'm going to my cabin to sleep like the dead.
Must be nice to have a cabin.
Would you prefer to sleep there? He asked quickly.
I lifted a brow.
Alone, if you're so inclined.
Mischief danced in his eyes. I snorted. Thank you, but I think you've made enough sacrifices. Taking on this crew, for instance. You'll need a quiet space to get away from all the arguing.
We'll find you a cabin tomorrow. One of my officers can bunk with the crew, but for tonight,
I'll sleep on the deck if that's all that's available.
There's a hammock in steerage if you don't mind bedding down among crates and barrels. You won't be disturbed. I'm thinking you might like some time alone.
Something sweet closed my throat. I was touched. Very thoughtful, Kai. Thank you. He nodded and left, his gait adjusting to the roll of the waves without a flicker of difficulty, like he was part of the ship. I turned and rested my elbows on the railing, staring down to where the sea churned, nearly invisible in the dark. In a few minutes, I wouldn't be able to see the water at all, but I'd know it was there because of the way it heaved us up and dropped us down, gentle now, but subject to the whims of the winds. In a matter of hours or even minutes, the swells could turn from calm to violent. It was like the Minnax. I couldn't see it, but I knew it was there. I sensed it more now that I had no one and nothing to distract me. Would it remain passive and allow me to direct it? Or would it take its cue from a vengeful wind god and dash me to pieces against the rocks of its hate? I had no choice but to try to weather it, to hold the wheel tight, to fight to stay on course. It wasn't only me who counted on my ability to remain in control. The entire world would suffer if I didn't. When I thought of it that way, I couldn't breathe, couldn't think. I gripped the railing and stared down at the deepening gloom. It was darkness. There was nothing to be gained by denying it. My best chance lay in treating this new ability the way I'd always treated my fire, as part of me. Fear of my fire had ruled me when I had had no control over it. Darkness, like fire, was a gift I could master. A gust brushed my hair to the side and I turned toward it. It smelled of harvest, of wheat being bound into sheaths, of fallen leaves and crisp pine. The stray breeze had come from the west. I smiled. Cirrus was sending a message of support. I held my hand out, catching the scented air in my palm. Just as suddenly, a vicious gust cut across the deck, snapping the sails. An east wind, threatening rain. Air swirled around me, pulling the breath from my lungs and wrapping my hair around my upper arms like binding ropes. The wind twisted away. The sails fell slack. I shoved my hair back and rubbed the chill from my arms. The air smelled of smoke and blood, of army camps and battlefields. A wordless message from Eurus, as clear as if it were written in the stars. Prepare for war.
This has been a Hachette audio production of Fireblood, written by Ellie Blake, read by Jennifer English. Fireblood is also available in print and digital formats from Little Brown & Company, a division of Hachette Book Group. For more Hachette audio productions, visit us at hachetteaudio.com. Thank you for listening. Text copyright 2017 by Ellie Blake. Audio production copyright 2017 by Hodder & Stoughton Limited. All rights reserved. Hachette Book Group supports the right to free expression and the value of copyright. The purpose of copyright is to encourage writers and artists to produce the creative works that enrich our culture. The duplicating, uploading, and distribution of this audiobook without permission is a theft of the author's intellectual property. If you would like permission to use material from the audiobook, other than for review purposes, please contact permissions at hbgusa.com. Thank you for your support of the author's rights. This audiobook is a work of fiction. Names, characters, places, and incidents are either the product of the author's imagination or used fictitiously, and any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, events or locales is entirely coincidental.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.